oh my God, we sound like we're drunk and can't talk. And oh my God, it's so slow.
Welcome to Stargazing, a Stargate gazing podcast. I'm your host, Mary.
And I'm your other host, Kathy.
And each week we review an episode of Stargate alternating between SG-1 and Atlantis.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry, I was muted.
Oh, that's okay. I was like, oh shit, what now?
I see that your name today is Vacation
Already.
Brain, even though there's still a week until vacation.
Yep. I was like, well, I'm going to start playing a video game 10 minutes before we were supposed to record, because that's what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yep. I'm like, well, I'm not going to do anything else today except play video games.
I mean, that's pretty much my plan. That's why I wanted to get my run and my homework for the class I'm taking done before we recorded, so that after we record, I can do literally nothing.
Yeah.
Except probably also play video games.
The only thing left I have to do today after this is grocery shopping, which isn't going to happen till like 6 o'clock tonight because I'm not dealing with crowds.
Mm. Yeah, fair. I should practice my violin at some point, but that's fine. I can do that anytime and don't have to leave the house.
Fair. So yeah, I am already ready for us to be at the place we are going.
As am I. Me too. We have to wait over a week.
That's okay. Then. I can do it. I just want to be done with work, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same. Which will be slightly before we leave, so.
Yeah. A couple days before we leave. Fair.
Yeah.
My semester hasn't been too busy. It has calmed down since... Well, has calmed down all of this one past week. Has been a little bit more calm. But I'm hoping it will stay that way for the rest of the semester.
We have another new employee that started this week, so I was doing a lot of training this week.
Mm.
And we'll be doing more next week. And I'm like, I love training. I love help, you know, showing people how to do shit. That's one of my favorite parts of my job. But I'm so tired, and I'm better now. I got some sleep this weekend, which was great. But I've been also like not drinking enough water, and my work has been extra dry. And by like Thursday, my voice was annoying. Like,
Yeah, I know how that goes. Yeah. Lots of talking.
Yeah, it seems better now. I know. I was at chorus on Thursday night, and I'm like, I can't do this. I'm just going to mouth some of these notes. I can't right now.
That's fair. Yeah. Understandable.
But that's okay. It's okay. We're here.
You sound fine today.
Yay!
Yay!
It's my coffee-fueled throat.
Yay! I want more coffee. I've only had one cup today, which is generally how much I have these days, but I think I'm going to make more coffee after this.
I have two.
And it'll be great.
Yeah. How are you doing otherwise besides work? All good?
What else have I done? Ooh, I had an interview with somebody from... like a news website that focuses on higher education as a result of my testimony from a couple weeks ago. So that was cool.
That's exciting.
Yeah. I have no idea what the article is that they are working on or when it will be published, but it was still cool to participate.
Hell
yeah. In. Yeah. So then that's the only super interesting thing that happened this week. It's been pretty routine, which was kind of nice.
That is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My brother met with a realtor this week, which is exciting.
Ooh. That is exciting to potentially get him out of your house finally.
He's, you know, it's very, very early in the process.
It'll still take a while.
Because he definitely
has. But at least he started.
And they gave him a list of mortgage brokers to talk to and stuff like that so he can work on the ball rolling down the hill or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going to have to co-sign for him? Because that's not.
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, I hope to God not, but.
But given his lack of credit history, he might need.
Yeah, we'll see what happens when he actually talks to financial people and go from there. I mean, if it's just a matter of he needs to like have another year of employment history, it might be better to just have him live with me for one more year than for me to co-sign a mortgage.
True. Yeah, this is true.
I mean,
that would also suck, but it would be better than co-signing a mortgage for somebody that you are, not married to or something. Even then, it would be that would be a weird situation because you would be getting the mortgage together. So co-signing a mortgage, never good.
No, and I don't think my brother is gonna like suddenly fall out of life and disappear or something, but you know, stuff happens. Still, he might get laid off from your job, and then what, you know?
Good. Yeah.
I definitely can't afford two mortgages.
Right. Not a whole lot of people can. A lot of people can't really even afford one mortgage because house buying has gotten ridiculous.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm kind of limping along. I mean, the mortgage part is fine. I'm just limping along in life financially, but that's fine. That's most people as well. So
I was going to say, that's kind of everybody.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
I mean, it's one banana, Michael. What could it cost? $10?
Know who else has trust? I don't know. I mean, trust issues. I don't have trust issues. Know who wouldn't sign a mortgage for each other?
Know who else is in a less than ideal living arrangement where they both want to not be in that arrangement anymore and want with the second group to
That's
leave?
That's good.
Nailed it.
Okay.
Yeah. Who's that?
The Athosians are your brother.
Yes. My brother is the Athosians. Yes.
Yes.
And his cats are Taylor.
You're going to keep his cats when he moves out?
They might not want to leave me.
Fair.
I'm just saying. They're going to want to leave. Fair. The sun rises and sets on my brother, so with them. Even last night I was playing with Gibby in the kitchen because I was sitting on the couch. My brother had gone to bed at like 9 o'clock because he had to work stupid early this morning. And I'm sitting on the couch and Gibby's like, which she never does at me.
Wow, that blew out my
Sorry.
God. That blew out my audio, whatever that was.
That was Gibby meowing at me. Gibby meowed at me. So I went in the kitchen to play with her and pet her, but every few seconds she'd turn and stare at my brother's door like, does he notice me? Is he gonna come see me? I love him so much. So yeah, his cats are not gonna abandon him for me.
Fair.
Anyway,
what are we talking about today with this episode?
This is Stargate Atlantis season 1 episode 5, Suspicion.
Woo.
We can't go on together. I haven't listened to that song in so long. I'm gonna sing it way out of tune. Anyway,
I don't know that song well enough to judge you for that. I mean, I've heard it, but whatever. Anyway, Dr. Weir wants to know who the hell all these people are coming through the gate. At least one of them is Taylor Amagan. Earth people should go home. Wraith don't age, maybe, and you don't know what you've done. Is my recap.
Nice.
Thank you.
I like it.
Thank you. Actually, I should say it more like, you don't know what you have done. More Wraith Queen-like.
Yeah. Oh, man, we got to come up with a Wraith voice that's like Cookie Monster, but not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, they're not Cookie Monster-like. No.
But they aren't quite human sounding either.
No. They're more throaty.
Yeah. We'll think about this.
The episode starts in the control room/gate room, which on this show are kind of one and the same. The control room's just kind of a little offset from the area where the gate opens up. There's an incoming wormhole. It is Major Shepard coming in. They have only been gone for a few hours, so they are not expecting anybody to be coming back yet. Shepard comes through on the radio saying they're coming in hot. They have some sort of a shield that they are able to lower to protect the people in the control area. The team of Rodney and Shepard, Taylor, I think, is there too.
Yeah.
And Ford all come in with blast strikes coming in after them. One of them gets McKay in the face, so that sucks a lot. Poor McKay. It knocks him unconscious, but he does have a pulse, so he's presumably going to be okay.
I had issues with their actions coming through that resulted in Rodney taking a shot to the face.
Oh?
And that was that they ran through, turned around, and just stared into the gate. Why the fuck?
Oh, yeah, that is dumb.
They knew there was firefighting happening. Why the fuck didn't they get out of the way when they came through?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that, but excellent point. If they knew that they were coming in being fired upon, they should have, immediately run out of the way, off to the side, hidden behind a thing.
Yeah, it's not like
something.
They can fire back at. I mean, if something came through, yes, but they obviously also know the procedures for the base. Like, there were people there with guns aimed at the Stargate.
Yeah, in case something got through. Or someone, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, weird choice.
Like,
you're
all
right.
Well, I mean, it resulted in, you know, paralyzed Rodney. So that was fun, but
yeah,
yeah.
I'm disabled.
Next, we're in the infirmary. McKay is waking up. He's a little bit drooly because half of his face isn't really working all that well, and he's also having trouble talking because, again, half of his face isn't really working all that well. But everyone assures him that it is just temporary paralysis by some sort of full overload to the sensory and motor nervous system, according to Beckett, by whatever the Wraith weapon was that hit him. Beckett goes on to talk about how fascinating it is, really, and McKay doesn't really want to hear anything about what Beckett has to say about how interesting the science is behind the Wraith weapon. So he cuts him off to ask if he's paralyzed, but again, they assure him it's only temporary and he's going to be fine in just a little while.
More like,
Yes. That is more what McKay's question sounded like, yes. Beckett mentions the fact that it's fortunate that Wraith weapons were only designed to incapacitate rather than kill, because Rodney would for sure be dead by now after getting hit in the face by a weapon if that had been the intent. Weir comes in and asks Shepard if she can see him for a minute. So Shepard, who had been there, goes to leave and talk to Weir. Out in the hall, Dr. Weir says that she's got some concerns about the fact that every single time they send a team out to a planet, there seems to be a Wraith encounter, literally every single time. And it's not like the Wraith are actually just happening to be present on all of these planets. She thinks that they have a spy that is following them to these planets and attacking them once they get there.
Why would anyone spy for the Wraith?
Yeah, right? Seriously.
I get where her conclusion comes from, but like, who would do that?
What would the benefit be, like, to anybody? Yeah.
Yes, please come eat all of my friends and family that I have left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, few of them still exist?
Delicious.
Yeah.
I don't know what benefit the Wraith could give somebody to make it worthwhile, other than, like, sparing that person. But if you have to lose all of the people you care about in order to be spared, unless they're a sociopath and don't actually care about any of the other people, then I don't know if there's a huge benefit to that.
Because, like, in their galaxy, Earth galaxy, people obviously, like, worship the Goa'uld, but the Goa'uld don't literally eat them. So...
Right. Yes. Very true. Weird. And also, like, they think the Goa'uld are gods, whereas nobody here seems to think that about the Wraith.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good times.
Mm-hmm.
After credits, we're having a little meeting. Before the meeting start, Rodney has his foot up on the table massaging it because it's still a little numb. Shepard asks him if he could not do that there, which, yes, please, that's weird. But at least he was wearing socks because bare feet are gross.
Mm.
Anyway, Weir comes in to start the meeting and Ford notices that Tayla is not there. So Shepard, Weir, McKay, Ford, and their security guy Bates are all there, but no Tayla, which is weird.
Indeed.
Dr. Weir tells them that Tayla was not invited because she's an Athosian, and probably one of those people is the one who is the spy that Dr. Weir thinks is on base. Shepard is incensed. He's like, this is Tayla. She's on my team. I trust her. But Dr. Weir's like, yeah, no, we really don't have a choice. The safety of the base is the most important thing, and it should be yours, she admonishes him. They've been attacked a bunch of times, as stated by the Wraith, which is too many times to be coincidence, because two of the worlds where they were attacked were unpopulated altogether. So nobody was sending them a message from that planet being like, please come, people are here, eat them, eat them. McKay is more or less leaning towards Shepard's side of this. As far as one, trusting Tayla, and two, skeptical about this whole thing, he asks if someone on base was communicating with the Wraith, why haven't they attacked Atlantis? But they just kind of ignore that question.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because it's
a
pointed good question.
Yes, a valid question.
Instead, they start debating whether or not they should just stop using the Stargate altogether. Shepard's on the side of, we need ZPMs, so yes, we have to keep using it. The security guy Bates is like, no, we should stop. The city's running fine. And we've got this security issue. Shepard and McKay are like, well, what about it when the Wraith do show up? Or how do we get back to Earth ever? In conclusion, they do still need to use the Stargate, but until they find out who is causing the Wraith to show up wherever they go, they're going to not use the gate. And also, Bates suggests confining all non-base personnel to the south side of the complex as a bare minimum.
Indeed. Yeah.
Bates has other recommendations. He doesn't think that anybody should be in the operations area of the Stargate control room. There we go. They shouldn't be allowed in labs, near power generation, and the jumper bay. Dr. Weir also says she wants to meet with every Athosian on base. She's like, I only know a handful of them by name. Whose fault is that, Dr. Weir?
Right. Does she know all of the people from Earth well enough to be able to completely rule out any of them? I was wondering why she didn't even consider the possibility that it could be an Earth person, especially given the fact that some of these Earth people were actually held captive by the Wraith for a while. So I thought maybe she should at least be suspecting the primary team since they were all being held by the Wraith for a while.
Yeah, she's definitely got some bias going on here where surely our people could not possibly.
Right. I mean, like, what does she even really know about Shepard?
Commander Shepard is the protagonist of the Mass Effect series and one of the most recognizable characters in gaming.
He joined in last minute. He was held captive by the Wraith. She barely knows him. But put so
he
much trust in him.
He could have been a Wraith sleeper all along.
I thought it was unfair and... What's that?
I said he could have been a Wraith sleeper all along.
Right? Yeah, seriously. I thought she put a little bit too much trust into the Earth people and should have been equally suspicious about everybody.
Yes, agreed.
Especially because, realistically to me, it seems like the Athosians would have, for sure, less motivation to be a spy for the Wraith than any Earth people might. Because the Athosians have been dealing with the Wraith for their entire lives and are all terrified of them, so
yeah, the Wraith could have offered one of those prisoners like all kinds of power to get back home.
Right, exactly.
In exchange, yeah,
exactly. They definitely could help out an Earth person more and make more promises to an Earth person.
Oh yeah.
Than I think any of the Athosians would benefit from. But nope, that's not how Weir decides to take this.
Nope.
In the gate room, Tayla comes in and tries to go up to see Weir, but she is stopped by a guard because the area is off limits, according to the guard. Tayla is understandably insulted by that. Shepard comes down to talk to her and says that she is unaware that any meeting has been called because she can see that the rest of the team is there hanging out with Weir, having a chat. And Shepard says, let's go take a walk. So they go wander around outside. Shepard tells her about the concern of a security leak on Atlantis. She is skeptical, but also kind of horrified about that, understandably, and asks if he's certain. And Shepard's like, well, we're not really sure, but we're pretty sure. And so we've got to take some precautions, like not trusting you or any of your people. Tayla is pretty incensed by that, understandably, and reiterates the horrors generations of her people have faced at the hands of the Wraith. As we were just talking about, she talks about how ridiculous it is to suspect that any of her people would ever side with the Wraith in light of that. And Shepard's like, yeah, but you know, there's so many people here that Weir has never even met. And again, that's kind of on Weir. That's not really on them.
Yeah.
Tayla says that she can vouch for each and every one of them, though, so that if they trust Tayla, then they should trust all of her people, since she trusts all of her people and knows them all very well.
Shepard.
What's up?
Jeff came in, said Shepard, and then closed the door.
Oh, I think I missed it. I hope it picked up on the recording.
I hope so. Shepard mentions the fact that every time they step through the gate, the Wraith try to kill them, and that he's getting a little bit tired of it and would imagine that she would be too. All he's asking for is a little cooperation with their search. And Taylor's displeased with that, but says that they will have her cooperation, and presumably that of the Athosians also.
I loved her, like, controlled fury.
Right?
She was like, yes, we will cooperate. She's so mad.
Clearly full of rage, but still managing to act very calmly.
Yeah. Dr. Weir has started up her interviews. She's starting with the people she knows. So it's Holling, because he's basically the only Athosian we know by name besides Tayla.
Right? And a kid.
And the kid, Jinto.
I don't remember the other kid's name that we did find out.
Yeah, I forgot what it is now.
Wex or something?
Rex? Shepard?
Wex something with a W? Yeah. Dr. Weir is in casual wear.
Oh, I didn't
She's
even
wearing
notice.
This like light blue button-down shirt instead of her Atlantis jacket, and I was wondering if she was like trying to appear like, this is no big deal. We totally don't think you guys are spying for the Wraith. This is just a friendly chat, guys. Not sure if that was what she was trying to convey, but that's the message I got.
Yes.
It was a terrible shirt.
I didn't even notice.
I didn't like the shirt. I don't like shirts with button-down shirts with pockets on both sides that have flaps. It just looks terrible, I think. But anyway.
I can't wear button-down shirts because they're not made for people with muscles, female people with muscles.
They're also not made for female people with big boobs.
Also that, yeah. So no button-down shirts ever fit me because they'll be super tight across my shoulders and around my biceps and then like billowy at the waist and they just look awful on me. And they're uncomfortable. Yep.
Yeah. 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 So I used to have to pin them all shut to keep my boobs from popping out.
I do too. And it's not, again, not because I have any boobs, but because I have muscle there instead that pulls the shirt open instead. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's annoying.
It's dumb.
Anyway.
It's dumb.
It's so dumb.
It's so dumb. It's brilliant.
No! It's just dumb.
Button down shirts, not for everyone.
No. Clothing aimed at women, frequently stupid and ill fitted.
Yeah.
To the majority of how female people are actually shaped.
Yes. Yes.
Many of them are, I've heard on a podcast about this, many of them are actually based on one particular lady from the 50s who was a model and was like the basis for all women's clothing. So everything that was made to fit her. And then they just sized it up or down using the same ratios that that person had, which are obviously not the same ratios that everybody else has. So that is why women's clothing frequently fits so poorly, because it's based off of this one person from like the 50s or 60s.
It's horrifying. And I hope that that's been changing, I would hope. But
I don't know that it is, unfortunately, but maybe.
I don't know.
I frequently just wear men's clothing or unisex clothing.
Fair.
Because it fits better.
Very fair. Yeah. So Dr. Weir, wearing her button-down shirt, is talking to Holling. She starts friendly. She's like, how's Jinto? And he is already annoyed with her because he's like, well enough for a boy confined to his living quarters. So I guess they didn't just tell the Athosians they can't go certain places, but they've locked them in their rooms? I was confused about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Athosians already know that they are suspected of collaborating with the Wraith, and they, in addition to being confined to whatever quarters and having to meet with Dr. Weir, they also cannot go off-world, but everybody's got that restriction. Dr. Weir lays out again, we don't know what's going on, but clearly something's going on because the Wraith keeps showing up.
Peekaboo.
And then Bates starts asking questions. He's like, oh, you've been off world 3 times? We also heard that Stackhouse,
Stucky,
another guy on Atlantis, lost track of you a couple of times. What were you doing then? Holling's like, I went to visit some friends. And Bates like, 2 of your visits predated attacks by the Wraith by a day. Which even is a little too far for Dr. Weir. She kind of gives him a warning, like,
yeah.
But Holling is like, what?
I get that this is Bates' job, but he's doesn't have to be such an ass about it.
No. Holling is like, you think I'm going to betray my people and put my son in jeopardy? Basically, he's like, this is nuts.
Yes.
Weir keeps being like, oh, no, we're not accusing anyone. But clearly, that is not what Holling is getting from this meeting.
Yeah. And that is understandable because Bates is coming across very accusingly.
Yeah. Actually, too, during this exchange, Bates even says it can't possibly be one of our own people.
Yeah. But it could, though.
It could totally be one of your own people. You're bad at security, man.
Yeah. The fact that they're not suspecting anyone from Earth at all seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah. Holling lays it down for them. He's like, I lost my friends. Another person that you spoke to before me lost her parents. All of us have lost people at the hands of the Wraith. How the fuck could you possibly accuse us of this? And then Weir's like, we're not accusing anyone again, which LOL.
But Bates totally is, though.
Yeah, yeah. And Holling's mad. He leaves. He's like, I came expecting an interview, not an interrogation. Which, totally fair.
Yes.
Did Weir not have, like, a talk with Bates before this started?
Apparently not. Or maybe they were intentionally doing a good cop, bad cop kind of thing.
Maybe. But they did it poorly.
Yes.
Because the good cop could not get anywhere.
Very true. And the bad cop could also not get anywhere because he was just being an asshole.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is they all know that Weir is in charge. So she's clearly, even if it is a good cop, bad cop, she put Bates on this.
Yeah.
Which they would know. Maybe they could find somebody else. Maybe if Shepard were in there good copping, like, they could be both be doing it at the behest of Weir or something like that. But
yeah.
Anyway.
And then we are in the jumper bay with Rodney and Zelenka. They're just there to run some diagnostics on various things. So they're just doing some nerdy science stuff.
Standard nerds!
Talking about the food that they've been eating recently. It's a thrilling conversation. Apparently Rodney really likes military rations and also hospital food, which he admits he knows is weird. He doesn't like airplane food, though, because you can't get seconds. Anyway, while they're talking about this, something beeps, and Rodney says it's a thing he's never seen before. Zelenka asks what its function is, and Rodney's like, well, I don't know, because I've never seen it before. And then there's some noise, and some things start happening, and all of a sudden, the roof opens up. Apparently, it is a retractable roof, so they can readily get the puddle jumpers, not just through the gate, but up through the ceiling so they can explore the planet a little bit more now. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know the roof could do that. Off in some Athosian's quarters, there's a bunch of them meeting and rightfully being angry about the situation. They don't know how long they have to put up with being kept in these rooms, wherever this is, and being stuck here with no access to the gate. Tayla comes in and is not pleased that she was not included in this discussion either. So everybody's leaving Tayla out, which kind of sucks for her. I'd be pissed
Poor
too if
Tayla.
I was her.
Yeah.
Holling says that he is angry that she didn't take more of a stand in their defense. And Tayla says that she's been doing the best she can to protect everyone on the base, but that if there is, in fact, somebody collaborating with the Wraith, it's going to threaten everybody, so they need to figure out what is going on. Holling asks if she supports Weir's decision to confine them, and Taylor reminds him that technically they are guests in the city, so Weir can pretty much do whatever they want, and it's her right to confine them to their quarters if that's what she decides to do. But, of course, the Athosians aren't pleased because they feel more like prisoners rather than guests, as Taylor had referred to it. But they can choose to leave if they can figure out where to go. Tayla asks, where would you go? Holling is kind of angry about the fact that she asked, where would you go, rather than saying, where would we go? He continues to mention that they have friends on other worlds and various other places that might take them in, so maybe that would be an option. But Tayla says that just because they're good trading partners doesn't mean that they would necessarily make good hosts, and the people that are on those other planets that they know might not necessarily want to host the Athosians long term. But the Athosians are pretty convinced that there's got to be somewhere else that they could go that's going to be better than being confined to quarters here in Atlantis. But Taylor reminds them, now that the Wraith have woken up again, there isn't any place that it would actually be safe for them to go. Not any safer than where they currently are, anyway. But Holling says it's not safe to stay where they are either, because they're being blamed for something that they didn't do, and who knows what the ramifications of that could be. Tayla insists that they don't have any reason to be afraid, but Holling does not trust Dr. Weir as much as Tayla does, which is fair. Tayla says it's not that she trusts Weir more than she trusts her own people, which is what Holling is trying to imply, but she understands the responsibility that Dr. Weir has in trying to keep all of her people safe. And Tayla does think that there's got to be some reason other than just coincidence that the Wraith keep managing to find them everywhere they go. So they just need to give the Earth people a chance to figure out what's actually going on, even if it's not the Athosians that are helping out the Wraith. There is something weird happening that needs to be figured out. So while Taylor doesn't approve of their measures, Atlantis is still a better shelter than anything else and tries to encourage her people to just be patient a little bit longer while the situation is figured out.
Somewhere on Atlantis, Ford is chasing Shepard down the hall. He catches up to Shepard, and it turns out that Shepard is going on a little trip. He is going to take one of the jumpers out through the new jumper bay door they've found to explore the planet. And Ford wants to go along. He brought snacks. Shepard didn't want him to go initially, but gives in, and they've got turkey sandwiches. Because that's what we eat here in the Stargate world. Turkey sandwiches and Jell-O.
Indeed.
And apparently airplane food and hospital food and, yeah, well, Rodney likes those things. Anyway, that's about it. Shepard's gonna go out and Ford is gonna go with him. Meanwhile, Dr. Weir is continuing her interviews. Taylor comes in, though Weir says she wasn't expecting her. I liked her outfit here. Taylor's, not Weir. Weir is still wearing that weird blue button-down shirt. It's not weird. It's a normal shirt.
It is.
I'm just being weird about it.
And it seems to fit her properly, so maybe she pays to have her clothes tailored, or maybe she happens to have the exact same proportions as that one lady
maybe.
That all clothing is based on.
Yeah. But Taylor's outfit is great. I love it.
I love her outfit, yeah.
Her hair was super cute, too.
It was.
She's got a little, like, parts, you know, on the sides pulled back and Taylor's looking real good.
She is. Yeah. Also arm goals still. Always arm
goals. Yes. Obviously arm goals. My God. Yeah. I'd say ab goals, but that will never happen. So
she does have ab goals.
Yeah. Anyway.
Always wearing a midriff bearing shirt, pretty much.
Yeah. Taylor is there because she says she was surprised to be left off Weir's list of interviewees, though Weir did not think that was necessary. Taylor's like, you should have come to me first. I can tell you all about my people. Bates says, is it possible you don't know them as well as you think? And then Taylor just ignores him, basically, and just keeps talking to Dr. Weir, and it was great. Great Taylor power move. I loved it.
Yes.
Talk to the hand.
Taylor is there to talk about the fact that they are in a similar position as far as leadership goes, so she understands where Weir is coming from, although her own people don't understand as well as she does. Dr. Weir is like, there's nothing I can do about that, and I need to do whatever I can to solve this problem, and right now I need to keep talking to all your people. She says every single person here, but she just means the Athosians. Taylor lets her know that her people are talking about leaving Atlantis, which for some reason Dr. Weir is surprised about, and she says she hoped it doesn't come to that. But Taylor says not all change is for the worse, so the Athosians might leave.
Then we're in the jumper bay, and Shepard and Ford are in there and getting ready for their little field trip. They're both very excited. They take off, head out through the roof, start flying around the planet, and talk about the fact that they kind of miss the fact that they're not pulling any G's here because of the inertial dampeningers. But Shepard says that they would actually have so many G-forces hitting them that they would die and their eyes would literally pop out of their skulls. So that's probably good then, that that's not happening. It did make me wonder what their rate of acceleration is, because he didn't actually specify. He just said, at this rate of acceleration.
Ludicrous speed.
Made me curious. Yes, indeed. Ludicrous speed, which is a speed rather than an acceleration. But
that's true, but yeah.
Ludicrous acceleration.
Yes.
So they're going to have some sandwiches and enjoy the fact that their internal organs are not being crushed into their chairs. They talk about the fact that they haven't named the planet yet, and Ford wants to name it. Shepard reminds Ford that they have decided Ford shouldn't be naming anything, even though Ford says he wants to name it Atlantica or something like that. And then they look out the window and notice that they see land.
Iceberg, right ahead!
Which they did not realize was out there. And it seems to be a lot of land. Very big land.
Huge tracts of land!
And when they get back to the conference room and continue talking about it, they specify that it is huge, somewhere around 15 million square miles, give or take. So yes, that is in fact a lot. Rodney says that would make it approximately the size of, I have no idea, but it sounds huge, and it is. So it's about 25 minutes away by jumper, Shepard says. And he said he saw some sweet breakers to the south. So maybe they can do some surfing eventually. They're going to send a team to get some soil and water samples to see if they might be able to do some food production there on the island. They also talk about the possibility of dumping the Ethosians there if it is habitable, which Shepard is angry about. This was Bates who was talking about this, of course, because Bates is a jerk. And he specifies he's not sending them out there to die. They would only be sending them there if it is, in fact, livable. So they're going to check for monsters and giant bugs and deadly things in addition to seeing if the water is drinkable and soil is possible to grow stuff in and all that kind of stuff. Bates is pretty sure it can't be any worse than their original homeworld.
An asshole.
My home, slimy, my home this is.
Rodney's like, well, maybe that's just a failure of imagination on your part. I appreciate that Rodney's contribution there.
Yeah.
But regardless, they do need to do a survey on the planet. So that's what they're going to do. And Weir says she's not going to rule anything out, meaning that she's going to keep in mind the possibility of putting the Ethosians there. Which is just as well, because in the next scene, Dr. Weir is out in the hall and the Ethosians want to go to the land on this newly discovered world because they're not feeling welcome here in the city anymore and they like the idea of having a place they can call their own. So it seems they're not going to need to necessarily just be kicked out and dumped there because they will go there willingly. Dr. Weir asks if Halling and his people have discussed this with Tayla, but he says Tayla has made her decision. So I guess no.
Yeah. So is this some kind of like bloodless coup by Halling?
That's what it seems like.
He's control of the Ethosians.
Yeah. So it would seem.
Not that they're complaining about it.
Right.
Yeah. I like that they continue to have sort of Stargate tunnel vision about planets like on SG-1 where they're just like, oh, this is a desert planet. Obviously, look, that's all we can see around the Stargate.
Yeah.
Oh, this is an ocean world.
Yeah.
That's all we can see.
Oh, it's an ice planet.
Yeah.
Definitely not because we're in a cold part of the planet. It's got to be an ice planet.
Yeah. So that's fun. Next, the Ethosians are packing up to go. Tayla comes to pay Halling a visit. Notably, she's wearing an Atlantis outfit in this scene, which I feel like was sort of symbolically like, yes, I am part of this team now. She is not going with them, Halling confirms. Tayla is there to tell him that there will be communications available between Atlantis and the mainland in case they need help. And they have a goodbye moment where basically they have an understanding that Tayla needs to stay and Halling's gonna go and everything's okay and they touch foreheads and life is okay. It's not okay, but you know, it's what it is. I hate that phrase. Why did I just say that? God. It is what it is, man. Okay,
I hate that too. It implies that nothing can be done about situations that often things can be done about.
Yes.
Sometimes, in rare occasions, it is fairly accurate, but when I was a health coach and a personal trainer, I had so many people that would just be like, well, it is what it is. I'm like, well, so you aren't going to bother to even try to eat healthier because you've decided that you're just an unhealthy person and that's it? Okay, fun. That's a neat way to look at life.
Okay, now, to be fair.
To be fair. Drove me crazy.
Yeah. Next, Tayla is watching her people leaving with Dr. Weir. I think it's just still like the two of them are leaders and they know what each other is going through.
Yeah, that is my impression.
They're just very empathetic to one another. And yeah, so Tayla is watching her people go and Dr. Weir is empathizing and they're talking about, will they ever get to go back to Earth? And she's like, I can't afford to have doubts about that. And Taylor's like, you can't afford to show them, you mean. So yeah. Anyway, that was it. That was not an exciting scene.
No.
But in conclusion, the Ethosians are gone.
Indeed.
Since the Ethosians are gone, they've decided to resume going through the Stargate. The Atlantis people, not the Ethosians, obviously. There are two teams, it looks like, of people. There's like 8 people going through the gate. So in addition to Shepard, Tayla, Rodney, and Ford, there's a group of other people. They go through the gate and that's it.
They go to some planet. They're going to have a look around at said planet. Seems to be deserted, but there are some stone ruins which would indicate that it was inhabited at least at some point. Tayla is insistent that there are, to her knowledge, still natives on this planet, but that they are very shy and are not going to come out of hiding because they don't trust people that they don't know. So she thinks that she should go off on her own to try to make communication with them. And Shepard's like, sure, you can go off on your own with Ford. She's like, really, I should be alone. And Shepard's like, you will be alone. You'll be alone with Ford. So they head off into the woods. Tayla is speaking some other language because apparently not absolutely everybody speaks English in this galaxy, just most people.
If we met them, they would speak English.
Yes, absolutely. We don't actually meet them. Spoiler.
Sorry.
She's calling around. Nobody's answering. She assures Ford that there is no risk to her whatsoever from these people and that he should stay behind and let her continue on. So they agree to do that as long as she maintains radio contact if she needs anything. Back in the clearing, we see some shadows moving around in the foliage, and then Shepard realizes that there are wraith about, and a firefight starts. Ford tries to call to Tayla on the radio, but she is not answering. Shepard calls to him to say that they're taking fire and tells Ford to come back to the gate. Ford says that Tayla's not with her, so Shepard says to go find her first and then come back. They take down a couple of the wraith, although one of them gets back up. The wraith take down Shepard. There's firefight just goes back and forth. It's not looking so great. Tayla and Ford are still not back yet as this is going on, so it's kind of just chaos. In the gate room, Stackhouse comes through, as do Shepard, who is being dragged through because he was taken down by the wraith. They shut down the gate, even though Ford and Tayla are not with them because the wraith were right behind them. Rodney wants to go back, of course, for Tayla and Ford, but Stackhouse advises against it because there are apparently wraith all over the planet.
At some point after this, Weir is having a talk with Rodney and Bates and Stackhouse. There might be more people there. I think there was a crowd.
Yeah, there are a few.
To talk about the situation. They don't know how many wraith were on the planet. They couldn't really see them. Rodney is impatient. He's like, we need to mount a rescue. We're wasting time. And Weir is like, but I need more information before we send anyone back through. So she starts asking about the circumstances that led Tayla and Ford to be separated. They went to go meet the natives, Stackhouse tells them. Bates is like, whose idea was that? Shepard then walks in. He's okay.
Shepard? Is that... you're alive?
He says it was his idea and she was following his orders. Shepard says he did not take a full blast and that's why he's up and about and not drooling in the infirmary. He didn't go with Tayla and Ford because the natives are very skittish about visitors. Bates is like, Tayla, huh? And Shepard's like, dude, no. Bates is like, dude, reprimand me if you need to, but 6 times your team has been compromised and there is only one Athosian who knew about this last mission you were on. And they're having a little face-off when suddenly there's an unscheduled off-world activation.
Unauthorized incoming traveler.
It's Tayla. She radios over to them and tells them that Ford's been wounded and the wraith are on their tail and they've got to bring the shield down so that they can come through. Dr. Weirs gets on the radio and is like, Lieutenant Ford, can you confirm this? Because we don't trust Tayla at all anymore. Tayla's like, he is out cold. And we really, really need you to bring down the shield because we will have no choice but to go through the Stargate. Bates warns against doing it. Shepard yells to open the damn gate. Weir finally decides and tells them to lower the shield. And Tayla drags unconscious Ford through the Stargate. And meanwhile, she's been surrounded by Atlantis guards who are all pointing their weapons at her. Seems like overkill, but okay.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that they were suspecting some wraith might be accompanying her.
True.
So it's not really so much that they're all pointed at her.
No, well, they close in on her, though. Like,
yeah, it's true.
I don't know. Seemed a little much. Anyway,
next we're in the conference room. Shepard, Weir, and Bates are all in there arguing about what just happened. Shepard is obviously on Taylor's side, saying that if she were helping the Wraith, why would she even bother to bring Ford back, or why would she bother coming back at all? Bates says that maybe she is more used to them here in Atlantis and was just making it seem like she was rescuing Ford. And Shepard's like, well, she carried him through the gate, so I wouldn't say it seemed like she was rescuing him. She was rescuing him. But because Ford is still unconscious, they can't ask him about what actually happened. Bates reiterates it's just his job to express safety concerns, and that's all he's doing is his job.
Look, I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Then Bates accuses Shepard of putting his personal feelings first. Shepard outranks Bates, and so dismisses Bates. Then Weir reminds Shepard, though, that she is the one that put Bates in charge of security, not him. And he's like, okay, well, cool. Go ahead and dismiss me then for dismissing him. But instead, she suggests that he goes down and checks on Lieutenant Ford. Meanwhile, in Rodney's lab, Bates comes in with all of Taylor's stuff and dumps it out on the counter. Rodney is very angry that Bates now wants him to go through all of her things. After a little bit of protest, Bates basically just orders him to do it, which I thought was kind of weird because McKay is not in the military, so Bates can't really order him to do anything, but Rodney begrudgingly agrees and starts to help him sorting through her stuff to look through for any transmitters or weapons or anything that shouldn't be there. Down in the infirmary, Ford is awake now and tells Shepard that they came under fire and he didn't actually even see the Wraith. They returned fire on the people that were firing on them, and he was hit from behind. Taylor saved his ass. And he is very grateful to Taylor for saving him. Then Rodney comes in and is seeming kind of nervous. He is a little bit ashamed to admit that he was just going through all of Taylor's stuff. And of course, Shepard is angry to find out that Rodney was going through all of his stuff. But Rodney is like, well, I have to show you something, though. So they go back to his office. Not Ford. Ford stays in the infirmary. But Rodney and Shepard go back to Rodney's office.
In McKay's office, he shows Shepard the thing he found. It's her locket. It's a transmitter that's been broadcasting a continuous signal.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. He says he would not have noticed if he hadn't been specifically looking for it. So some kind of very fancy transmitter.
Hmm.
Shepard looks at it and he's like, I found that thing when we first met Taylor. I found it in a cave in the dirt. Then we get a flashback of Shepard picking up the locket and giving it to Taylor, who lost it years ago. And then we're in the conference room, where Rodney is reporting about the locket. That it's not a very powerful signal it's sending, it doesn't go very far, not through subspace, so there must in some places be relay devices that pick up this transmission and then those send out alerts to the Wraith. The places where they were attacked or probably have that since this is Rodney's guess. Shepard's like, oof, we owe some people an apology.
They sure do. Absolutely.
Yep. Rodney says the locket was probably dormant until Shepard picked it up and activated it. Taylor has had it since she was a kid, if we recall. Her dad gave it to her. Actually, I don't know if that was a recollection. Anyway, she had it. She lost it. Bates wants to know why the Wraith weren't attacking them then. McKay's like, it was dormant, I just
said? They were sleeping, yes.
Yes. The Wraith were sleeping, but also the impression I get from this scene is that the locket is yet another thing genetically coded to only work with the,
was specifically Shepard touching it that activated it too. They did mention that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Shepard has the gene. Taylor does not, but Shepard does.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So the Wraith, Rodney says, probably created this to detect the ancients during their war. The Athosians then just thought it was a nice necklace, Shepard says. Rodney's like, how could I possibly know that? Which I was, what am I answer man? That's what you're doing, so maybe don't get so sarcastic and upset about it. But anyway, in conclusion, the Athosians were not betraying anybody, and maybe they can use this necklace against the Wraith.
Then we're down in the infirmary, I guess because that's where Ford is, and they want to talk to Ford. Rodney is clearly nervous, although he is trying to claim that he is not nervous. They don't talk about specifically what it is that they are planning to do, but I think it's pretty obvious that they are getting ready to go to a planet and they're going to try to lure the Wraith there with the locket is kind of the general takeaway of the scene overall. Tayla comes in to join them, so I guess they've decided that they do trust her now and she's going to be joining them for this mission. They have some kind of like stun gun that they're going to be trying to use on the Wraith, a stun grenade more specifically. It is in a mixture of aluminum and potassium chlorate, so it'll be very bright and also release a high pressure wave when it is exploded. It will have a range of about 15 to 20 feet. They've also got some tasers and high voltage, low amperage charge to those tasers, which will mimic the body's electrical systems to help them take out the Wraith. So they've got a bunch of weapons besides guns that they're going to be trying to take out the Wraith with, since shooting them doesn't really seem to do a whole lot because of their regenerative abilities.
Yeah.
And that's it. Why they were in the infirmary for this, I don't really know. But they were.
I also have another question about this scene.
Yeah.
Rodney says the last planet they visited was inaccessible by ship. What the fuck does that mean? How could a planet be inaccessible by ship?
Too far?
Because they're talking about the Wraith, though, in this context. He says, and the ruins around the Stargate should force the Wraith to come through on foot. Are they talking about just the darts coming through the Stargate? Because it doesn't make sense that...
Could be.
A planet was not accessible by ship specifically. That just seemed a weird thing to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I would guess that maybe there's like just ruins oriented in front of the gate in such a way that the dart couldn't come through without immediately crashing into one or something like that.
A weird way to
would be my guess.
Because it sounds like the whole planet, you just can't get to it by ship for some reason.
Can't get there from here.
Yeah. I don't know. It's also possible that maybe the planet is too far away from any place that they could get to it by a ship.
For the Wraith?
Yeah, we don't know exactly where they're centered. I mean, they could get there more readily, but they might not be able to get there fast
maybe,
enough.
I don't know. Anyway.
Or it might be so far away that, because they did talk about the fact that the locket has limited range, so they might not want to go to a planet that's kind of far away where there aren't likely to be any Wraith nearby to get the signal. Hmm. Or like even if they got the signal, it might take them too long to get there or
maybe.
Something. Would be my guess also.
Sure.
Yeah.
Be more clear, Rodney.
Right?
Yeah. So they go to... Did they go back to the same planet they were on?
I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It is a planet.
They go to a planet. Could be the same one. Could be a different one. They spot the Wraith on the planet. So they decide to implement their plan. Before they start, though, Rodney is still nervous, he says. He is very nervous. He's just sitting there going, I'm fine, though. It's cool.
What happened to his little personal protection device that I don't think ever see again?
Maybe it used too much power trying to protect him from that smoke monster and
maybe.
It died.
Could be. And they don't have a way to charge it. That's possible.
Yeah. So they ambush the Wraith. They set off some explosives and then start shooting them all. And a bunch of the Wraith go down. One does get back up.
We'll be singing when we're winning. We'll be singing. I get knocked down.
And they're like, that's the one. We're going to do it. So they surround the Wraith and taser him a bunch. Meanwhile, Taylor's off on her own killing another Wraith that wasn't part of the group. I'm not really sure why, but
she put so many bullets into him.
From
her semi-automatic weapon at very close range.
But still, that Wraith does not die. And then she has to have a hand-to-hand combat situation. Or actually, she grabs some sticks and fights the Wraith with them. It was pretty cool. It was a good fight.
It was. She beats the shit out of the thing with two sticks.
Meanwhile, the other group who had tasered the Wraith are disappointed, shocked to find out that the Wraith has activated a self-destruct device on himself. So they run away, so they do not blow up too.
I didn't know how they knew that was a self-destructed device. I mean, it did start beeping, but I don't know. Why they're just like, oh, it must be a self-destruct device.
Better safe than sorry, I guess.
I mean, it was a self-destruct device, but I don't know how they knew that.
Meanwhile, Tayla continues her fight. The Wraith does get the upper hand at some point, but by that point, Shepard has found them and has one of the Wraith guns and shoots the Wraith with their own guns and knocks him out. Or not. Actually, he doesn't even knock him out. He knocks him down. The Wraith is still awake. And they prevent him from also self-destructing.
Indeed. Yeah. Then we're back on Atlantis. Weir and Tayla are in the hall. They have a little bit of a chat because Weir wants to catch up with Tayla before she heads to the mainland. Tayla is in her Athosian wear rather than the Atlantis action jacket that she wears when they are on missions. Tayla says, according to Holling, they're busily planting crops and things are going well with the establishment of their new little settlement there. And she's going to go and tell them everything that has just happened here on Atlantis and presumably on that planet where they had their little face-off with the Wraith. Dr. Weir doesn't actually apologize, which I thought would have been nice. Instead, she just says that she's aware that the last few days have been very difficult for Tayla.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, maybe apologize, though, because they were difficult for Tayla in no small part due to you, Dr. Weir. But again, that's not what happens. And Tayla is being very gracious and understanding about it, probably more so than I would have been in her shoes. But she says that in Dr. Weir's place, she probably would have done the same thing. So they've essentially made up, I guess, is the takeaway from this.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, they've brought that Wraith back to Atlantis with them. And they have him in a cell. Shepard is there talking to him. The Wraith, being very full of himself, talks about how persistent the humans are and that he thought they would have given up by now, but why he's being so full of himself when he's the one being held prisoner, I do not know. And Shepard's like, well, cool, we've got all the time in the world because we have you trapped here. So, you know, now or later, it doesn't matter. You're going to talk to us eventually. The Wraith tries to come to Shepard and grab him and presumably nom nom on a little bit of his life force energy, but that isn't going to work because, as Shepard says, the ancients were pretty good at shields and stuff like that. And so, of course, there is an energy shield that is going to keep the Wraith from being able to consume any aspect of Shepard. And he gives the Wraith a week or maybe two tops. I don't know if he was giving him a week or two tops before he starves to death or before he gets desperate and starts talking, or maybe both. Who knows?
Maybe both.
But the Wraith says that it's just a waste because he's not going to give them any information whatsoever. And Shepard says, cool, well, you know, if you don't get too hungry, maybe that gunshot wound that we're not treating will cause you enough pain to make you get to be a little bit more desperate. But I would think the gunshot wound would heal itself. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Of course, the Wraith then tries to make threats to Shepard about how Shepard is going to be the first one that he feeds upon when he gets free. And Shepard says, cool, but in the meantime, I'm going to go eat a sandwich. And the Wraith teases Shepard for thinking he's won a victory, but he's only hastened his own doom.
I hear that one.
I have coffee now. And also a live drop of Shepard. They essentially end the scene with the Wraith telling Shepard that there's nowhere in this world they can hide, and Shepard says, well, stay positive, and then leaves.
End of episode.
Did you like the episode?
Yeah, I did. Watching it, I was a little bit stressed out. Like, the tension was a lot for me. Mm. I don't know. But, I thought it was a good job. They did a good job with that. And in some ways, it really sucked because this total lack of trust now between the two is not good.
Yeah.
And it wasn't warranted, ultimately. But it's going to, I think, have lasting repercussions, it seems like. Because I think the Athosians will be hard-pressed to trust the Earth people again. So that'll be interesting. I thought that Tayla being caught in the middle was an interesting thing to watch and see how she handled that. So it wasn't a fun episode, but it was definitely really interesting and I thought did a lot for sort of ongoing complications to their mission, I guess is how I would put that. It'll be fun to see what they do with the Wraith.
Indeed.
Fun, yes. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the Wraith. And
my guess is they'll either never mention it again or it will backfire on them spectacularly, one or the other.
Yeah. And I hope going forward they're not as blind to their own people as they are in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. I liked it. I thought it was a good episode. How about you?
I did like the episode. I did think it was good. I think it's understandable that there are going to be some trust issues here, as we were seeing, although, like I said, I did think it was really weird that Weir and Bates both were just assuming it couldn't have been anyone from Earth when, like you and I were saying before, it actually would have made way more sense if it was somebody from Earth acting as a spy than it would have made for any of the Athosians to be acting as a spy. So that was just some false logic happening on their part that I found to be frustrating, but I guess also kind of understandable at the same time that they wouldn't want to believe it could be any of the people that they brought from Earth.
Yeah.
Which is just kind of willful ignorance.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did think it was really interesting that they finally figured out a way to explore the planet a little bit more. I knew they did eventually, but I couldn't remember exactly how or when that came about. So yeah, so some establishment of a little bit more information about the planet that they're on is good. And them finally discussing the trust issues that they should have probably addressed before now
yeah.
is also good. And like you said, it will be interesting to see what, if anything, comes of the wreath that they've captured. I would imagine they're going to do something with that, but you know, who knows? We've definitely seen other things over on SG-1 that we thought would turn into something and then never did, so...
Maybe they just forget he's there and he starves to death.
It could be, yeah. Could be. Let's give him maybe a bowl of apples that have been sitting on the floor.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
they did with those delegates that they shut in a room together on SG-1.
What do we got coming up next?
Next, we are back to SG-1. And we are going to be watching Season 8, Episode 6. Avatar, a virtual reality training scenario, goes terribly wrong when the simulation begins to learn from Teal'c, trapping him and endangering his life. Jackson volunteers to enter the simulation on a rescue mission, but will he be able to rescue Teal'c, or will Jackson become a victim himself?
Ooh.
So it's basically a holodeck run amok
yeah.
episode, which we've seen so many times over on Star Trek.
Yes.
Over at the TVDB, Teal'c is trapped in a virtual reality simulation in which he must defend the base from a Gold super soldier incursion.
Mm.
Okay.
It sounds relatively low stakes, except for Teal'c.
Yes. Yeah. Indeed.
Because it's not a real incursion.
Right.
Yeah.
Could be interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
I've been definitely... don't remember
quite
this.
Disappointed with what's going on over there at SG-1, although there have been a couple more recent episodes that I did enjoy, so we'll see. If it's a little hit or miss these days and these later seasons.
Yeah, I'm worried they peaked in Season 6.
I really think that they did.
But yeah, we'll
see. I'm not feeling very optimistic about this last two-thirds of a season or three-quarters of a season we've got left, but we'll see what happens.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Fabulous.
Thank you so much for listening to Stargazing with Kathy and Mary. This podcast is completely listener-supported, and we couldn't do it without you. Show your support by telling everyone you know about how awesome this show is. Your reviews help a lot, especially on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at stargazing.space. Reach out to us via email at stargazing@gmail.com. Find us on social media at Stargazing on Instagram, stargazing@mastodon.world. Get some merch at tinyurl.com/stargazing. And finally, show your financial support by joining us over at patreon.com/stargazing. Thank you for traveling through the gate with us. We'll catch you next time on Stargazing with Kathy and Mary.
I'm Mary.
I'm Kathy.
And you've been listening to Stargazing. The end.
The end.